and welcome to episode uno of Audio Choke here at MMATorch.com. Encourage you to go onto the forums. Also, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/MMATorch. My name is Matt Collins.
I am Greg Rowland.
And I'm Tobin Shelby.
Excellent. This is it. Did I do that okay? The slash for the Twitter? I've always worried about that.
You know, I'm not really sure. I just say Twitter, and then Demonic Squirrel is me. So that's how I always do it. I don't know if there's... Well, there's got to be a way to do it.
I think the cool kids say at before they're...
So MMATorch at Twitter.com. Like a
right,
email
or,
address.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter at MMATorch or whatever.
Okay, cool. All right.
I think the people out there can figure it out. They're smart. Cookies, right?
They were smart enough to find us here.
Yeah. Excellent point.
All right, December 5th, Saturday, Ultimate Fighter finale. What's going on with that?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on with that, but unfortunately, we don't know it all yet. And that's not because we haven't been doing our research. It's because...
We've spent minutes.
Yeah, we were looking that up. But you're going to have to watch on Wednesday to see what's going to happen, because the UFC has always been tight-lipped about that kind of stuff. They don't let you in on it. And until it's on air, they're not going to announce the people who are actually in the final matches. They have announced, however, that Kimbo has a fight. He is not going to be in the finals, so they keep teasing us over and over again. Like, he's going to fight again. He's going to fight again in the house. He's not going to fight again. And if he does, he is going to lose. Because he's not in the finale.
Yeah, as soon as he was eliminated, they're like, will he come back because of injury from someone else? He hasn't.
Yeah, he's their big ratings guy because he's the star for whatever reason. But
he has the YouTube fame.
Yeah, I would think that being on Channel 38 would be good enough, but I guess YouTube is more popular.
Yeah, no, basic cable is second only to YouTube, I believe.
Yeah. He's got a fight, though, that I am really excited about. And this is not in the MMA purist sense, where it's two guys that are awesome going at it, and they have a very technical fight.
This is more of a spectacle, like a mouse versus the elephant.
Yeah, this is the train wreck. This is Kimbo Slice fighting Houston Alexander. And if you don't remember him, he sucks. But he hits like a son of a bitch and can knock people out really fast. I am looking forward to it.
More excited for him.
What's that?
Oh, people were very excited for him until they figured out he had no ground game.
Yes. Basically, if you get on top of him, he'll just kind of lay there and let you hit him. And he'll tough it out for a little while, but if you decide to choke him or something, it's all over. And Kimbo is much the same. Both of them hit hard. Both of them have questionable chins, and both of them have absolutely no ground game. So that's going to be a short, tasty treat.
Who looks good in the house to you, Tobin?
I mean, just with experience, I got to give it to... for the show, I got to say, I think most people would peg Roy Nelson as the winner for the show, for sure. He's the one coming in with the most experience. I mean, he made Kimbo look fairly horrible. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, most people who are... well-versed with MMA knowledge would pick Roy Nelson, but, you know, Marcus Jones has got a good shot at, you know, maybe being the upset pick with him being able to, apparently having decent submissions, even though he's, you know, a giant.
What do you think this season's strong points of the Ultimate Fighter have been? Certain seasons have different flavors, I guess you could say, to them. You know, some of them are more about the fighters themselves, or a focus on the coaches, or just overall good fights. Is this more of a, I don't know, more traditional reality show season, or is it more about the fights than ever?
It was definitely about the fights until Kimbo fought, it seemed like. And then after that, they were like, well, there goes the moneymaker. he was really bringing in humongous ratings. His fight with Roy Nelson was the best ratings ever for the show, I believe. And, you know, after that, the ratings dropped a bit. And he's been still featured prominently, so it's kind of switched back to the reality show component. Another thing is no one's really stuck out as, like, being an amazing prospect. I mentioned Roy Nelson earlier, who's got, you know, a great record as a seasoned veteran, not having fought in the UFC, however. But he appears to be blessed with anti-charisma at least on the show. Who knows if that's editing or not, but he has not come across well, even though he's won his fight so far.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with all of that. This has definitely been the season of Kimbo. They were hyping it up to be about Kimbo before the season even started, and even though he lost in the third episode, he has just been all over the place. The best part for me, aside from Wes Sims, who cracks me up, just all the ridiculous stuff he was doing, it's just been Rashad and Rampage fighting all the time. And that's why it's a big bummer that Rampage is not going to be doing that fight coming up, because, they've been talking trash the whole season, and they've been getting in each other's faces, and now it's not going to happen. I have to agree about Roy Nelson. He's a good fighter, but he has just done everything he possibly could, at least the way it looks, to, just make everyone want to see him lose. I don't want to see him win. I would love to see Marcus Jones win. He just seems like a really nice guy, for one, and that armbar he pulled off was pretty awesome. But if I were to put money on it, it would be Roy Nelson, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus Jones definitely has, as far as human interest goes, definitely has the best story there. And, former NFL player and fairly new to mixed martial arts, at least, and, a family man and all that. And not someone who kind of embodies the stereotypical fighter mentality. He's very reserved and quiet and low-key for the most part.
And
you know,
go on.
Gardening.
Oh, it was just funny seeing him, run away from spiders and stuff, talk about gardening. He's not the typical tough guy.
Do you think that's the way mixed martial arts is going now? I mean, are we going to see more Tito Ortizes in there? Or are we going to see more Brocks, where they come from a different background than what you'd expect a mixed martial artist to be from?
I mean, I'd say a lot of the fighters are still coming from traditional backgrounds. I mean, and now it's even more people grow up training MMA as opposed to training a specific style and then adapting that to MMA. But yeah, I mean, you still have a lot of people coming from the collegiate wrestling scene and such, or jiu-jitsu rather. So it all depends. I mean, I think Brock Lesnar's kind of one of the few exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more jack of all trades, so to speak, in the future, where there's guys who watch the sport, watch the early stuff, and especially now that the sport has blown up in the last few years, there's going to be people who have been training mixed martial arts since they were kids, and those guys are going to be blowing away the type of people that we're seeing right now, who are, a wrestler or a kickboxer or whatever, somebody who thought that they could, get a little bit of money in mixed martial arts. These are going to be people who grew up on mixed martial arts and are going to be, training that from the beginning. So they're going to be not great at one thing and pretty good at everything else. They're going to be really damn good at everything.
All right. Now we move 1 week ahead of the Ultimate Fighter season finale, which is airing December 5th to December 12th. It's a Saturday with UFC 107.
This should be a pretty good show, I think. It was the one that was supposed to have Rampage fight Rashad Evans. It was actually, it is in Rampage's hometown in Memphis, Tennessee. The main event is going to be BJ Penn against Diego Sanchez.
So, first off, the absence of Rampage. Let's just touch on that real quick. I'm sure we all know, but just in case.
Rampage is pitying fools right now. He is Mr. T, which I am pumped to see. I ain't going to lie.
The A-Team, huh?
Yeah, the A-Team movie. He is playing B.A. He is, he's filming a movie. It's going to be fun. I'm going to go watch it.
Is Dana White happy with that decision?
Dana White is furious. But Dana White's always mad. I mean, it doesn't take much to get under Dana White's skin.
No, not so much.
Any thoughts on that, Tobin? You ready for some A-Team action?
Oh, most definitely. I'm excited for the film, and yeah, Rampage Jackson seems to be a good fit for it. It's just unfortunate because really the season of The Ultimate Fighter had been built not only around Kimbo, but before they knew Rampage was going to kind of renege on his commitments. It's almost
Did he do like a traditional audition where with a headshot and everything like that?
I have no idea. But they had really built the entire season around the Ultimate or the the fight between Rashad Evans and Rampage, and when that fell through, I think the focus more so went to Kimbo. You know, it was going to be there before, but yeah, it's very unfortunate, and you know, I don't think there's any contracts broken or anything like that, but you know, kind of had been
inconveniences.
Right, you know, it had been assumed, you know, the coaches of the Ultimate Fighter fight, and both Rampage and Rashad had said that was the plan. Whether or not any papers were signed or not is something else, but yeah, it's just unfortunate for the fans.
I'm pretty confident that the papers weren't signed just because that, you know, this did happen, and, you know, Dana White is pretty good at holding people who are to contract to not letting them do what they want to do, like with Randy Couture a couple years ago when he tried to leave UFC, but he was under contract.
Yeah.
But, you know, Rampage isn't dumb. He knows the score. He knows that he was supposed to be fighting, whether or not the fight actually got signed. He knew that, you know, that was the plan. So I don't really feel a whole lot of sympathy. There's been a lot of talk about how the season of The Ultimate Fighter have been edited to make him look poorly in certain situations.
Hmm.
I don't know how much of that is true just because he screwed the UFC, but you know, he hasn't been the greatest coach either. I mean, there's no amount of editing that can make him not show up in the ring when his guy loses and all that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right, or offering such good corner advice as, get up.
Yeah. Don't let him do it! Don't let him do it!
Well, yeah, UFC 107 is going to go without its wolf on, so BJ Penn...
It looks very good.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, there is going to be somebody from the Wolf's Lair in there, and that is Chet Congo, who is fighting Frank Mir. The winner is going to be right up there in the heavyweight title scene once again, especially now that Brock Lesnar is out and they are looking at an interim title that hasn't been announced 100% yet, but that's definitely looking like the way things are going to be going.
Is that
going
to be a good fight?
You know, it's hard to say. It's definitely a striker against grappler match. Frank Mir is known for taking people down really quickly and breaking their arm. He does not like it when people taps out. He actually wants to break their arm or whatever. And Chet Congo is a big, strong guy who will knock people senseless.
Yeah,
and
he's probably got one of the better boxing games in MMA for sure.
Yeah, well, he beat Krokop standing up back before, you know, Krokop was looking as bad as he is now. So, you know, Chet Congo is definitely somebody to worry about standing up. The biggest thing that bothers me about this fight is that Frank Mir might get cocky and try to stand up with Chet, which would not be a wise decision on his part. But I see people do that stuff all the time when they get cocky, and Frank Mir is most definitely extremely cocky.
Yeah, I mean, his stand-up has improved, and he showed that in the Nogueira fight, but to compare that to Chet Congo, who's got far superior striking, I would say, I'd say, you know, for Mir's kind of stick to what he knows, maybe, you know, stand a little bit and feel him out, but I can't imagine him staying standing with Congo for sure.
Yeah. My pick, I would go with Frank Mir by submission. Congo is really not known for any kind of ground game, and his takedown defense has gotten better, but he's still, you know, he's not a very good wrestler. So I think Frank Mir is going to get him down if he fights smart, and he's going to submit him somehow.
Yeah, I'd have to go along the same lines. I mean, if Mir stands up for too long, it's going to go bad for him. But, I mean, Congo looked really bad in his last fight. He's just basically able to throw a few punches before getting basically taken down again and again throughout the course of a fight. So, yeah, and if Mir can get it down, and I'd see it going his way for sure.
Well, let's poke our heads into this UFC lightweight championship with BJ Penn and Diego Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any way that Diego Sanchez is going to win, personally. There's always the X factor of the sport, and you know, that's why they have them fight the fights. But you look at it, and there's nowhere that Diego should be better than BJ Penn. BJ Penn has got some of the best boxing in the sport. He is a world champion at jiu-jitsu, and he's damn near impossible to take down. Diego Sanchez is really good, and he's got great conditioning, but at lightweight, BJ Penn has to come in shape, otherwise he can't make the limit of 155. He tends to get tired and lose his fights at welterweight because he's able to eat cheeseburgers, and you know, he doesn't get his cardio down all the way. But when he goes at 155, he is a monster. And, you know, I could be wrong. It does happen, but I can't see how Diego's going to win this one.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking along the same lines as that. I mean, I'm sure there's a few exceptions, but for the most part, when Patton loses and looks bad, it's because he's gassed himself out. George St. Pierre made him look bad with Penn gassed there, and, you know, when he lost to Matt Hughes before, it was kind of the same reason. But, yeah, we've seen Penn be able to defend against very good takedowns. His fights with Hughes are a good example of that. And, you know, like you said, Sanchez is a good fighter, but they don't call BJ Penn the prodigy to be cute. He's he's very good, and especially at the weight he's fighting at for this event. I guess just kind of looking at it, you could say you'd like to give Sanchez a shot at it. You know, like, yeah, he's capable of winning this fight, but when it comes specifically narrowing it down to, well, how would he do it? That's where the problem comes in, because BJ has his superior striking and the ground game, and Sanchez is a wrestler, but it's not on the level of Matt Hughes was when he was in his prime, or some of the other wrestlers Penn has fought. So I got to give the advantage to BJ Penn for sure.
Yeah, on paper, there's no reason why BJ Penn should lose, but on paper, there was no reason Nogueira should have lost to Frank Mir, and he got knocked out.
You are in the audio choke here at MMAtorch.com. Anything else you want to pick through at UFC 107?
I'm excited about the Kenny Florian-Clay Guida fight, for sure. That ought to be a high-paced, frantic fight. Hard to say who I'd have to give the edge to Kenny Florian there, but just two exciting fighters. Florian having most recently fought Penn, and Clay Guida actually coming off a loss to Diego Sanchez, so that would be a pretty interesting kind of reshuffle the deck at lightweight for sure. But
I think that this is a fight where Kenny Florian, once again on paper, Kenny Florian is better standing up and on the ground. However, Clay Guida is going to have the wrestling in this one. And something that I've seen Guida do a lot lately, he did it against Mac Danzig, and he did it against Nate Diaz, both guys who are not on the level of Kenny Florian, but they had similar style, is he basically kept the fight in a perpetual state of takedown. He never quite took them down to where he was in their guard, or he was trying to mount them and finish the fight, but he just kind of kept them up against the cage, and he was just working them and not really doing a whole lot. It wasn't really the most exciting fights, but he got the decision both times, and I could see him attempting something like that on Florian.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, Guida's a very fun fighter to watch. He's got great energy. I don't think he's ever gassed out in a fight, but just, and that gives him an edge against many opponents, but, I mean, technically speaking, for the most part, yeah, Florian seems to have the edge in many departments, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out for sure. I am excited about the pre-fight stare down in that fight, as well as the BJ Penn Sanchez fight, because both Guida and Sanchez bring an air of craziness to their pre-fight stare downs and such. So
yeah, it was particularly fun to watch the beginning of Clay Guida versus Diego Sanchez a few months back. Diego Sanchez is weird as hell, and he was walking down to the ring chanting "Yes, yes, yes" for God knows what reason. And then Clay Guida, he's got his long hair, and he's bouncing around, and they get in their face and just throwing punches. They had no concept of the word defense for the first, 45 seconds of that fight. And that was a really fun one to watch.
Yeah, no, that was a very, very exciting fight. Yeah, the pre-fight antics are very good. They both have humorously bad, scary faces. So I look forward to that almost as much as the fights coming up.
All right, shall we move on?
Yeah.
All right. UFC is in a world of hurt due to injuries right now.
That's right. UFC is hurting because all of their fighters are hurting. Brock Lesnar is so sick he may or may not fight again. It has recently come out that he has diverticulitis, I believe is how I'm supposed to say that, which is something that I had personally never heard of. But he had a hole in his intestine, which basically means he was crapping into the inside of his body.
Which is something my grandmother went through several years back, and I got to see her colostomy bag and everything afterwards. It was a bonding experience.
Okay. Yeah. So hopefully Brock Lesnar is doing good then.
Hopefully. I mean, it's a very life-threatening thing that he went through.
Right, and before, I mean, it was there's all kinds of rumors going around the internet about whether he was on death's door or not, and now that they kind of figured out what's wrong with him and stuff, I mean, it sounds like they're optimistic he'll be able to return at some point, but it's kind of one of those indefinite times away from training and from the UFC, so.
Yeah, he had a surgery recently, and he's undergoing treatment, he's getting better, but, you know, he's obviously not fighting this year, and there's still a pretty big question mark over next year. I heard a possibility, it's kind of a rumor, though, that he might be able to fight next summer, but even that's a year layoff from his last fight with Frank Mir, so that's a long time for a champion.
Gabriel Gonzaga.
That's the new one. He was supposed to be fighting Junior Dos Santos, the guy who just beat up Krokop, at UFC 108 next month, and he has a staph infection. He is out of the picture.
Speaking of staph infections, Nogueira.
Yes, Nogueira has the second staph infection in a year, and he is out of his fight with Cain Velasquez.
Mm. Some both fights I was looking forward to very much. So it is unfortunate.
Yeah, I believe they were both actually supposed to be at the UFC 108 card, so that card has suffered greatly, and actually Anderson Silva was rumored to be fighting that one, but he had surgery on his hand, I believe, and got taken out of that.
His elbow or something like that, but he doesn't sound like he's going to be recovered in time, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, but they pushed his fight with Vitor Belfort back to 109, I think, so at least that one's still on. It just hurt this particular card.
Yeah. But, it's too bad. They've really had a string of, I mean, even going back to the last couple of UFCs, I mean, luckily the last UFC we got Tito versus Forrest, which was really originally scheduled to be Tito versus Mark Coleman, and that was put off by injury, and we ended up luckily getting a better fight out of that, but still, it's just a lot of injuries going around.
Yeah, and if you hear Tito talk, he was all kinds of injured for that fight.
Yeah, and you know, even sounds like Forrest Griffin might have had a broken foot at one point or something. But yeah, I mean, so fortunately, I guess for the fans, the fight didn't get put off because of you know ongoing injuries that they had. But that would have been disastrous if the backup fight had gotten canceled as well.
The word on the street is that Shane Carwin also has kind of a bum knee right now. I haven't really heard the scope of it, but he's looking like he's going to be out for a few months also. He was supposed to be fighting Brock Lesnar originally this last weekend at UFC 106. But, of course, Brock Lesnar got sick, so that fight didn't happen. But it looks like Shane Carwin wouldn't have been ready for it either. And I'm hoping that as they're talking about an interim title, that he's going to be one of the guys, if he comes back in, say, February, maybe him against the winner of Mir and Congo, something like that.
Hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I think Velasquez would have to be in the mix at some point, too, but we'll see. I mean, the thing with the heavyweights, for sure, there's several very good fighters at the top, but the depth of that field drops off talent-wise very quickly. So anyone who's thrown together a few wins and has proven themselves to be a very capable fighter can usually count on getting a shot at some point, it seems like.
I would like to see Cain Velasquez go up against Junior Dos Santos now that both of them have lost their opponents. Mm. And Velasquez was set to fight Nogueira, and Dos Santos is one of Nogueira's students. So I think that would have a good little storyline to it.
Yeah, no, that'd be a good fight for sure to watch. Interesting. Velasquez looked much better in his last fight against Ben Rothwell, but still, it seems, needs to work a bit on his stand-up. I mean, his ground game, his wrestling's excellent, of course. Cardio seems great, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see him take another strong striker, for sure.
I think that Velasquez is going to be one of those fighters, that's going to be limited for pretty much his whole career, in the sense that he seems to be a very good fighter, a very talented fighter, but he doesn't hit hard. And for a heavyweight, that's going to kill him because everyone else hits hard. And, I mean, I've seen his fight with Congo and that fight with Ben Rothwell, which he did put away Ben Rothwell with strikes, but that was a stoppage from the referee. It wasn't like he had knocked him out. And,
right.
You know, Rothwell didn't look hurt at all, and he was getting pounded. So at heavyweight, you know, you can get away with that at smaller weight classes, but at heavyweight where everyone's got knockout power, I don't think that's going to fly.
Yeah, I was really surprised because he dominated Congo in their fight. I mean, basically was able to take him down after a flurry of punches, but, you know, couldn't, you know, basically was on top of Congo for the majority of the fight and was not able to put him away. But it'll be interesting to see how he progresses for sure. But, yeah, it's just, injuries have really put a lot of the, heavyweights and mostly, I think, every weight class, it seems like, is being plagued with, you know, at least one or two key injuries that really has hurt them.
All right, well, let's dive into some strike force here really quick.
All right.
With Thompson and Melendez 2 title fight happening.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Josh Thompson. I liked him back when he was in the UFC, and sadly he got dropped when the UFC dropped their lightweight class back in 2004, and when they started doing it again in 2006, he somehow slipped through the cracks, didn't get picked back up. He beat Gilbert Melendez a few years ago, I think now. He was the underdog at the time, and they've been trying to put on this rematch for quite some time, but Josh Thompson's injured foot has been stopping that forever.
Evolution happens December 19th. Tobin, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, well, he beat Melendez, I think it was back June of last year, I believe, and yeah, his injuries kind of put off the rematch, and I mean, Melendez has been looking good since then, and you know, it's hard to say which way the fight would go for sure, but yeah, it's exciting that the fight's been put on, back on, and you know, I think the fans are excited for it for sure, and you know, I'm pretty stoked that it's being put together. Hopefully it will not be delayed once more by injury. It seems the UFC's had most of the bad luck with that, so hopefully Strikeforce can avoid injury cancellations and such.
Well, you're inside the audio choke, MMAtorch.com. We encourage you to please post things on the forum. We will get to, you know, in this weekly podcast. Also, MMAtorch at Twitter.com. Earlier we were talking a little bit about Koscheck, and that was something you guys wanted to bring up for whatever reason. Let's find out what it was.
Yeah.
It's like talking about Koscheck is all.
Yeah, Koscheck is fun. He looks kind of like Bill Murray, I think, with bleached hair. Koscheck has been talking some smack lately about Dan Hardy, who, you know, a lot of people don't think that Dan Hardy really deserves his title shot with George St. Pierre, and he's kind of gotten it because no one else deserves it. George St. Pierre is basically Anderson Silva, the welterweight division. He has destroyed everyone in front of him, and, you know, there's no really good challengers. I wrote an article on the site about why I think that Dan Hardy is a good challenger, and that's basically just because he's a striker, and, you know, George St. Pierre has been feasting on wrestlers in the welterweight division. But, you know, Josh Koscheck feels that he deserves the title shot more than Dan Hardy. And I disagree.
Boom, it's down. Tobin?
I would agree with the disagreement for sure.
well, who? All right, then I disagree with both of you.
Yeah, see your case, man. No, yeah. I mean, Dan Hardy, certainly there's, I'm also in the camp that why not give him the title shot? He's strung together a good, even before he got into the UFC, he's had a good run in, of fights. And, you know, he's won all of his UFC fights so far. So there's no reason really not to give him a shot. As Greg mentioned, the striking aspect, I mean, St. Pierre has proven that, you know, some might call it a fluke loss, but his loss to Sarah was definitely because of striking. No two ways about that. And yeah, I mean, if Hardy could catch him with a good couple counters or whatever, he's definitely got the puncher's chance, as it were. Dan Hardy's definitely been working on his game all around, and I think he's certainly a good student of the game and very aware of what he'll need to work on to fight GSP. So it'll be interesting, but yeah, I don't think anyone in their right mind would say that would give Hardy the fight, you know, on paper at all. But they always have a shot, and for Koscheck to be calling him out, Koscheck needs to string a few more wins together. It seems like he just came off a loss prior to his victory over Frank Trigg. So he's only strung together two wins consecutively so far. But and you know, also you got to factor in Dan Hardy is good at building fights. He's appears to be the new king of smack talk or trash talk when it comes to putting fights together and putting a little more excitement behind them. So it's he's proven to be a good commodity for that, at least.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, and I think that Josh Koscheck, he just needs to build more momentum. Like you said before, Dan Hardy's on quite a streak. It's a 12-fight streak if you take away his disqualification loss a couple years ago. And even with that, it's like a 5 or 7 win streak. But 12 fights in a row, barring the disqualification, is a pretty incredible streak. And that's 4 UFC fights that he's won. And Josh Koscheck, he won his last 2, but then he got knocked out before that. And, you know, he's lost 2 out of his last 5. And if you want to tell me that Koscheck is a better fighter than Dan Hardy, I would believe you. I think that Koscheck would beat Dan Hardy. But I won't say that Koscheck is more deserving of the title shot, especially since he has fought George St. Pierre before. And he, you know, he put up a good fight against GSP. It wasn't like he got slaughtered. But, you know, he's lost, and it's somebody else's turn.
Right, yeah. I mean, definitely I'd like to see Koscheck take another shot at GSP down the road for sure. But, I mean, just, you know, get a few more wins under his belt. And he's been dabbling in his striking game, which, you know, has been impressive when it works, but embarrassingly bad when in his loss, he basically threw a very bad punch that resulted in him getting knocked out horrendously. But I mean, if he sticks to what he does best, I don't see any reason why after a few more fights, he shouldn't get another shot for sure. But yeah, it's always kind of weird looking at contenders and such, because yeah, I'd be in the same camp where he has a very good shot of beating Dan Hardy in a fight with very superior wrestling. The punching game would be very, I think, would be in Hardy's favor, but styles always make the fights, and you know, I think there's arguments both for Koscheck eventually fighting GSP again and Hardy fighting him now. Whether or not people think he deserves it or not, his record's pretty impressive.
Any parting shots?
You know, just back to Strikeforce really fast. So there was an event recently, and we had a Carrie Vera fight in the female 135 class, and she's only got a couple wins under her belt, but she's looking pretty impressive so far with a very good stand-up, so just kind of something to keep an eye on down the line.
Real quick, some background on her.
She is the wife of UFC fighter Brandon Vera, and she has a background in Muay Thai kickboxing. And, yeah, so she's just done a few fights, and it was her first fight in Strikeforce, I believe. Looks to have some very, very good potential, and that's one of the few things Strikeforce seems to have over the UFC is the female division, and trying to grow that at least, and bring attention to that. And I think she's one of the people who can help that division out.
Yeah, the UFC is really just never even, I mean, they've never had a women's fight, let alone a division for that. They've pretty much just shown no interest in that at all.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of depth in most women's divisions right now, but it's something they're building towards. Any quality fighters that they can get and bring in and kind of build up for Strikeforce is definitely a positive for them. So,
Greg Rowland?
I just got a couple little notes here. Check out on the front page of MMA Torch, if you haven't already, there is a nice little story about Junie Browning, the guy from The Ultimate Fighter Season 8, the raging alcoholic, who recently got kicked out of the UFC for getting in a fight with some nurses after a suicide attempt. He just had his first fight out of the UFC, made some comments about women having sex with him, oral sex, all kinds of stuff.
The two lines?
Yeah, he wanted a line for each, because he was ready to go, apparently. I don't know how deep those lines got.
It's very, very classy. Very classy gentleman.
Yeah.
He'd giggle and jest because he sounds like an idiot.
On his way back to the UFC, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's good at getting his name out there. As far as guys that have gotten kicked out of the UFC, I read about him more than just about anyone else that I can think of. And
yeah.
He really wasn't that great of a fighter. He was good in the Ultimate Fighter House because, you know, there's always like a lot of half-asses in there. He was better than some of those guys, but, you know, as soon as he got out of there, he started losing.
Yeah, I don't really think he actually has any business in the UFC unless he really improves his game. But, yeah, like you said, he's good at getting attention, which is half the battle, it seems like, for many MMA fighters.
A little news clip. Dana White uses Venus for shaving his head.
A lady's razor, I do believe.
That's right. And not only a lady's razor, but he likes the one with the gel on each side of it. Mm-hmm. Basically, he would not have a shaved head if it wasn't for this razor, ladies and gentlemen. He had so many nicks and cuts before he discovered this one that it wasn't worth it for him.
Do you think we're going to see him in ads anytime soon?
I hope so. I've got the UFC magazine right here, and I would love to see the Venus Razor sponsor the UFC. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be a big step forward in mixed martial arts for sure.
They could even just change the name to the Victor Razor or something like that.
That's right. Make it sound tough.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for spending this time with us. You're inside the Audio Choke. My name is Matt Collins.
I am Greg Rowland.
And I'm Tobin Shelby.
And thank you for hanging out. I'll do something better next time.
Yeah. This is a work in progress, people.
Yes.
Audio Choke.
That wasn't horrible. Hooray.